Hi, this is Randy Meisner.
And I'm Glenn Frey, in the studio for the album from The Eagles.
And I'm Redbeard. So, after all of that creative effort on the concept album Desperado, The Eagles handed it in to their co-managers, David Geffen and Elliot Roberts. Original Eagles bass player Randy Meisner shared the managers' and record label reactions.
David Geffen and Elliot were really kind of against it in a lot of ways. They didn't like it after we'd finished it, even because it wasn't the kind of album that you would think we should have had for the second album, is the only way I can put it. They thought it should be more down the line of the first album, with, you know, more rock and roll songs, and it shouldn't be a theme album. It was kind of a chancy album. It was a big chance to take.
A classic case of be careful of what you wish for because it might come true was Glenn Frey's somewhat naive insistence on selecting an English record producer in general, and in particular, Rolling Stones and The Who recording engineer Glynis Johns. Here's the late Eagles singer-songwriter, rhythm guitarist Glenn Frey in the studio.
I think Don and I were exasperated and frustrated with the fact that we couldn't get enough of our brains on tape, and that Glenn was a little bit, he was an immovable object when it came to discussing record production. As I said to you before, when he mixed the first Eagles record and we asked him if there was too much echo on the lead vocal, he said, "It's my echo and it's my signature and this is the way it's bloody gonna be." And we just sort of went, okay, I guess that's true. We did make Desperado with Glenn again. Part of the reason was because Ronnie Lane, who was the bass player in The Faces, told us that we still needed someone to oversee our project, that we weren't good enough to do it by ourselves. We said, okay. When we went over to do the third album, we were just totally frustrated. We recorded for 3 weeks in England and only got 2 tracks. We just didn't, you know, none of the other stuff came together. We didn't get any good takes on it. We then ran over to Holland to play a quick show. And in those days, what you did in order to record in England was you told people that you were doing a performance someplace and that you were going to rehearse there, and then we would go in and do the record and then go do the gig and at the end of the project to justify us being allowed in the country. Don and I were not at all pleased with the way our records were being produced, and at that time a fellow named Irving Azoff came in to work at the Geffen Roberts Company to start booking the tours for everybody. David was now the golden boy who was about to become president of Asylum. Elliot Roberts was very much involved with Neil, mostly Neil. And so they needed somebody to book tours for people, somebody to stay there, work the phones, and do the nuts and bolts work. And they brought in this little dynamo from Champaign, Illinois, named Irving Azoff, to do the tours. Irving liked us. And we had some conversations with Irving, which were sort of, you know, we're a little bit off in the corner, shoved off in the corner over here. And he sort of said, well, so am I, you know, and I think, you know, maybe, you know, I'll manage you guys. You know, I'm getting out of here pretty soon. I'm not going to do this. They've offered me a piece of the company, but I don't want it. I don't want to handhold Neil Young for the rest of my career. I want to do my own thing. I'm going to take Joe Walsh, Fogelberg, and if you guys want, you guys, and I'm going to start my own management company.
Let me tell you, I got some news for you.
Already Gone leads off the third Eagles album, On the Border, with a much punchier guitar-driven sound, courtesy of new manager Irving Azoff and producer Bill Zimzik.
He also, by representing Joe Walsh, represented producer Bill Zimzik, who had produced the Joe Walsh and Barnstorm record, which we really, really liked. And then he told us Zimzik also did The Thrill Is Gone by B.B. King, which we really, really liked. And he was doing the Jay Giles Band. We liked some of their stuff, too. So we told Irving that we wanted to change producers, and he suggested Bill Zimzik. So we met with Bill Zimzik at Chuck's Steakhouse next to the record plant on 3rd and sat down and talked with him about record production and stuff and decided that he was the guy for us. He was American. He understood American rock and roll. He was not burned out on electric guitars. And again, I think as you look at as you mentioned earlier, you look at the progression of Eagles records, and we start out as a soft rock country band with a couple of rock songs on the album. But with each record, the texture of the music gets tougher. And with each record, the subject matter gets a little more in depth and a little more topical and you know, a little more, I don't want to say cynical, but, you know, a little more insightful. So Bill Zimzik was like a godsend to us. Bill didn't mind letting us work in the studio for 2 or 3 hours on a lead guitar part to get it right. He allowed me in particular and all of us in general to spend a little more time learning about making records, to the point where maybe I spent 3 hours on a guitar solo, and by the time I was done, it was no better than it was when I had just spent a half an hour on it. But how am I to know that if I'm not allowed to explore that extra 2.5 hours? Then I can come back from this experience and say, you know, I do my best work in the first half hour. After that, it doesn't get any more in tune, you know, or whatever. I really am grateful to Bill because he did allow us the freedom to try to get things right, to try to just not play the first thing that came into your head about a guitar solo, but maybe give you 5 or 6 passes at it, and we'll bounce it down to one track, or we'll, that started out good, let's punch in there, and what about that lick, and what, you know. We really got into a little bit more of exploring musical possibilities before deciding what was going to go on the record. And that was something we sorely needed. And Bill was also a big rhythm and blues rock and roll freak, and he wanted us to be funkier. We used to have, like, track of the day, where Zimzik could come in, and before we started any work in the studio, Zimzik would play some obscure rhythm and blues song that none of us had ever heard before. You mean you never heard Function in the Junction? You mean you never heard, you know, such and such? And, you know, we studied rhythm and blues records at the beginnings of our session. We take turns bringing in soul tracks and listen to them. It was Irving's suggestion to bring Bill Zimzik in.
What you mean, James Dean?
by singing James Dean with the Eagles on 1974's On the Border album. Up next, the Eagles will soar to the highest peak. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the 45th anniversary of On the Border by the Eagles.
Hi, this is Randy Meisner.
And I'm Glenn Frey, in the studio for the album from the Eagles.
And I'm Redbeard, on the 45th anniversary of the Eagles' album On the Border. In hindsight, the pundits look at the brain trust that the Eagles had and figure that there's no way they could not be anything but the biggest American band of all time. You'll never meet two smarter, more talented, more ambitious people than Eagles founders Glenn Frey and Don Henley. Managed first by billionaire entertainment moguls David Geffen, Elliot Roberts, and then Irving Azoff. But even so, Glenn Frey admitted that everybody needs a little luck in this game.
You know, we had made a pretty significant splash with our first album and the three singles that came from it. After that, followed it with a concept album, Desperado, which I think gave us some credibility in the songwriting community, in the music community. And then the On the Border album came out. The On the Border album was more rock and roll, a little more R&B, especially the song On the Border. We released James Dean and Already Gone as singles from that album, and those singles were like what we called at the time turntable hits, meaning they got a lot of spins, but they didn't get above number 25 or 20 in the Billboard charts, never really busted into the top 10. And while we were recording one of these nights at the record plant, a station in Grand Rapids, Michigan, started playing Best of My Love, and the phones rang off the hook. And the DJ and the radio people from this station called our regional guy in Chicago and said, the phones are lighting up on this tune, Best of My Love. It spread to Chicago. It played there for a little while, and then we released it as a single. And, you know, it went to the top of the charts. It became a very, very successful record for us. I think at the time, you know, we were maybe trying to get away from that acoustic, pretty harmonies kind of thing, and we're more interested in, you know, James Dean. But as it turned out, it was the single that started a chain of hit singles that continued until the band broke up. Everything we released from then on was a hit.
Every night I'm lying in bed, holding you close in my dreams, thinking about all the things that we said and coming apart at the seams. We tried to talk it over, but the words come out too rough. I know you were trying to give me the best of your love. Beautiful faces and loud empty places. Look at the way that we live, wasting our time on cheap talk and wine. Left us so little to give. That same old crowd was like a cold dark cloud that we could never rise above. But here in my heart I give you the best of my love. Best of my love, you get the best of my love. Oh, sweet darling, you get the best of my love, you get the best of my love. I'm going back in time and it's a sweet dream. It was a quiet night and I would be alright if I could go on sleeping. But every morning I wake up and worry, what's gonna happen today?
that wasn't enough.
I was, you know, one other funny or interesting little anecdote to Best of My Love. At the time, I was friends with Joni Mitchell, and while hanging out with her, you know, Joni never played a song in standard tuning on her guitar. Every song she's ever written has been in some kind of tuning, whether it was D modal or open E or open G or any other number of tunings that she explored. And it was while trying to get into C tuning, which was something she had showed me, I was by myself trying to remember what that tuning was again, and I got halfway into the C tuning and stopped right there. And so it was like looking for the tuning that she had taught me, I found this other sort of tuning that ultimately ended up being the tuning that we used for Best of My Love, which for those guitar players listening would be that you take your low E string and lower it to C, take your low A string, lower it to G, and then if you hammer on what is A minor seventh on your D string and B string, it becomes a C chord with a low C in the bottom. And that was where la da 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 ta, la ta ta ta, that's where that came from. And after I lowered the two strings, I played that and I never went any further looking for the tuning. I said, this is really cool. I wonder what other chords I can play within this tuning. And then figured out kind of how to wrap my thumb over and play the D minor chord, which was the second chord in the song, and that's how that song was born.
That was co-writer Glenn Frey lifting the curtain on the secrets behind the Eagles' first number one song, Best of My Love. Because Frey left us so suddenly, too soon, chance memories like this next one from 1989 are so precious for original Eagles member Randy Meisner.
I saw Glenn the other day, and it was almost like we hadn't seen each other really, I would say, almost 10 years. And we were eating at this little place in North Hollywood. It's a little kind of breakfast place that a lot of people go to, you know, just old and funky and have good food. And I was sitting there, I was sitting eating with a friend, and he says, there's Glenn Frey. And I thought, yeah, not a chance. I thought he was, you know, kidding me or something. I turned around, and there's Glenn. And it was really good, you know, to see him. And because, you know, we had a little kind of rub there towards the end of the Eagles, and I think it's sometimes, you know, time heals all wounds, and it was great to see him and have a, you know, each gave each other a good hug and talked a little bit, and it really just made me feel good, you know, because I hate holding grudges or anything like that, you know, and it was just nice to see him, and so it was like a big relief, you know. I'm glad this interview is here, that I'm doing it so I can say it, you know.
Thank you.
Besides recording close to home with producer Bill Zimzik, another significant development occurred during the making of the On the Border album, according to Glenn Frey.
We were in sort of a quandary in that I wanted to do rock and roll, and Bernie wanted to do country music. And it was okay to do both of those, but what would happen is, on the rock and roll songs, the onus, for the lead guitar chores would fall to Bernie, who was a country picker. And on the country songs, where Bernie wanted to sing, it was like for me to do some stuff country, and it wasn't, you know, neither of us were suited to those jobs. So we decided, and the other thing is, we wanted to start doing harmony guitar solos. And you couldn't do that and still have rhythm guitar. So it was my suggestion. Don Felder was a friend of Bernie's from Gainesville, Florida. And Felder was up in Boston and came backstage and in the tuning room at the Boston Garden, where I think we were opening for the Allman Brothers on a big benefit or something, Felder sat down and started playing a little, picked up one of Bernie's guitars and put on a slide and started playing like Duane Allman. And I just lost my mind. This guy was so good, and he played all the right stuff, like the Derek and Domino's kind of playing, and you know, the Allman Brothers live at Fillmore East. He could play all that stuff. And I said, you know, we need to get this guy in our band, and then he can help us do three guitar ensemble stuff instead of two guitar ensemble stuff. And also free me up to sing a little more and not have to worry about covering all the bases. So it was for that reason that we brought Don Felder in.
Pretty mama,
you know, a lot is made about Joe Walsh joining the Eagles, and not to take anything away from the importance of that, but it is my feeling that the addition of Don Felder was one of the key moves that we ever made. He played the great guitar solo on One of These Nights. I think it is worth noting at this time that Don Felder is not only a good guitar player, he is a great bass player. And on the night that we started the One of These Nights album in Miami, Randy Meisner was trying to get to Miami from Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. He had to fly through Cleveland. There was a snowstorm. He didn't get in that night. And Henley and I had this song, One of These Nights, which I had written the music for on piano. And we wanted to at least cut a demo of a couple of these tunes. So we gave Felder the bass. And Don Felder wrote the bass part to One of These Nights. I mean, it was unbelievable. And it was so good on the demo that we said, you have to teach this part to Randy because this has got to be on the record. It took him about 2 days to finally get Randy to play it the way he did. Don Felder also wrote the bass part to Hotel California because it was an instrumental demo that he put together himself in his home studio. And again, we said, Randy, you got to play Felder's bass part because it's just too good. Great bass player, great guitar player.
Dress up all in lace, go in style. Late at night, a big old house gets lonely. I guess every form of refuge has its price. And it breaks her heart to think her love is only given to a man with hands as cold as ice. So she tells him she must go out for the evening to comfort an old friend who's feeling down. But he knows where she's going and she's leaving. She is headed for the cheating side of town. You can't. No way.
the strong one and stares out at the stars up in the sky. Another night, it's gonna be a long one. She draws a shade and hangs her head to cry. She wonders how it ever got this crazy. She thinks about a boy she knew in school. Did she get tired or did she just get lazy? She's so far gone, she feels just like a fool. My oh my, you sure know how to arrange things. You set it up so well, so carefully. Ain't it funny how your new life didn't change things? You're still the same old girl you used to be. You can't.
Was The Last Word from Glenn Frey, co-founder of the Eagles, who passed away at age 67 in January 2016 after a brief illness. God rest his soul. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Randy Meisner, and this edition is certainly dedicated to Glenn Frey. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2019, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Remote recording by Jim Nelson. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks, on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.